This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run, 7:06 Monday, the 4th of July. And as usual, in about half an hour, we'll be discussing whether Hong Kong can maintain its status as a global financial hub. But before that, let's have a quick recap on how global markets closed last Friday.
So they ended last week on a high note in the US, all in the green territory. The Dow and S&P 500 were up 1.1%. NASDAQ was up 0.9%. But over across in Asia, negative territory, with the bare exception of FBM KLCI, which was up 0.4%. But the rest of the key indices were down. The Nikkei was down 1.7%. Hang Seng down 0.6%. Shanghai Composite down 0.3%. And Singapore's STI down 0.2%.
And as usual, we are the lone ranger when every other Asian market is in the red. Somehow yes, we will manage to stay in the green. But for some outlook, we turn to Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global. Good morning, Kingsley. Once again, thanks for speaking to us. Now, US markets, as measured by the broad gauge of the S&P 500, had, I think you know this already, the worst first half performance since 1970. So the big question is, where do markets go from here onwards?
Yeah, well, it's a really big question. I think that the key thing to watch is what's happening to US bond yields, so the 10-year treasuries. As you know, I mean, they've been trading up in yield as the market priced inflation risks and also the rising US Fed interest rates. But I'll note that they peaked out around 3.5% about 3 weeks ago. And since then, they've come down. And indeed, last week, they really dived lower to around 2.9%. Now, the thing to remember is that when bond yields go down, that means bond prices are going up. So the nutshell view there is that bond investors, after a very, very bad bear market, are now starting to make a little money, at least in the short run. I think that relates to your question in a fairly simple way. What that indicates, we think, is that investors are now repositioning into the more defensive end of the market in bonds, possibly on the view that there is a US recession in coming down the track or indeed in progress already. So we'll need to watch that closely. I think what that means is we'll see more downside in markets in the near term, but we also think that it probably means that this inflationary fight may be abating now, and we'll look to the firmer prices across stocks in general once that becomes clearer.
Which then begs the question, okay, for the fixed income fund managers, they're clearly hiding in defensive names. But what about equity fund managers? Where can they go and hide?
Well, up until about 3 weeks ago, commodities was a good spot to hide. And we still think that long term, the structural trends really do favour commodities, particularly when you see these higher oil prices as a result of the Russia-Ukraine war, and also the commodities. And I mentioned, for example, in Malaysia, you know, palm oil prices, you know, although they retreated a little bit, they're still very strong. So we think that commodity is a good place to be. Right now, of course, they're selling off a little bit on that view that we could have a US recession coming. But we don't think that this commodity sell-off will be long-lived because the underlying demand dynamics are good. So what that means is a good time now to be going through that sector looking for buy opportunities. Elsewhere, I think the healthcare thematic is pretty strong. And so it's a good time also to be looking at biotechs and pharmaceutical firms and managed care providers. And then beyond that, you know, I guess the flip side of the geopolitical tension is that the aerospace and defense sector is probably looking pretty good for the next decade. It's just that being an industrial sector, it'll be a little weak over the next 6 months. So again, another area to look for buying opportunities.
Kingsley, with all this volatility and uncertainty, you know, the question in my mind is how resilient are banks in weathering this? You know, in the last few financial crises, they were hit quite badly, but how resilient are they managing this crisis, especially those in Asia?
Well, I think that the difference between the present conditions and what we saw in 2008 with the global financial crisis is that there's been a long period of balance sheet repair, particularly in places like Europe, where arguably the banks are still a bit challenged. But in the United States, they cleared that some years ago. So the US balance sheets are pretty good for their banking sector. In Asia, I think it's pretty much the same. You know, the exception is some concerns about the real estate sector in China and whether that might continue to pose some issues for financials across Asia, but particularly in mainland China. But if you put that aside, I think the banking sector in Asia is just pricing the short-term effects of this, you know, speculation about a recession in the United States and elsewhere. And I don't think that'll be long-lived because of the commodities dynamic that speaks to strong underlying demand. And, of course, we should expect pandemic conditions in China will eventually abate, and that will be a strong tailwind for markets with the stimulus we're likely to see in China.
Okay, I want to shift our attention to the semiconductor industry. If we look at the Philadelphia Stock Exchange Semiconductor Index, it's actually down 38%. So I struggle to understand why the index is down when we keep hearing about this global chip shortage.
Well, you know, semiconductors, it is a cyclical industry, and they've had a really great 5 years. And that was given a big boost by the effects you mentioned with the semiconductor shortage. However, there has been new construction of plants in places like China, and also a lot of the consumers of semiconductors that were in short supply have done a lot of redesign work to reduce their chip counts and other things, or indeed even rip the chips out of some auto you know, components. So, look, I think that what we're really facing here is the cyclical downturn that normally accompanies the semiconductor industry on about a three-year cycle. And the big warning for that was really the Micron result where, you know, they basically gave a pretty poor outlook. And that's a memory chip company. And memory chips tend to be the most cyclical of all. So I think that explains why you're seeing a bit of a downturn. And equally, the other factor to mention is during the COVID lockdowns, a lot of consumers bought new laptops for work from home. And you know, that trend's probably played out, at least in the near term, for people buying laptops. So I think we're just facing a bit of a short-term glut in chips that's mainly due to a tail off in demand and perhaps the effect of companies that, you know, predicted higher demand than we're currently experiencing have probably got inventories to work through because they're over-ordered. So that'll be a probably short, sharp downturn. But we'd definitely be looking to buy in the structurally favored areas of semiconductors like chip equipment, high-performance computing, and also the sorts of chips that go into a lot of these Internet of Things and 5G wireless type applications.
So then in that case, right, you know, the chip industry, I think, kind of benefited from this whole entry out from the pandemic situation. What's your thoughts on healthcare stocks then in the vaccine and glove industries? Are we going to see more pickup in that sector?
We think structurally it still looks very good for the long term. It's just that, as you mentioned, you know, the pandemic is receding in our memories. It's becoming less of a factor. And therefore, some of those early boosts to revenues for companies that were pre-revenue, like BioNTech and Moderna, the mRNA vaccine companies, you know, that's starting to fade. But I point that, you know, AstraZeneca, the manufacturer of AstraZeneca, the AstraZeneca vaccine, AstraZeneca, has actually been doing quite well, as has Eli Lilly, Merck and a number of other companies. So I do think that pharmaceuticals in general is worth a good look because of the obvious trend that we've all spoken about for years with aging baby boomers. But the other factor that I think is really important is as wealth grows in very large populous countries like India, I just think we're going to see higher demand for healthcare services, for pharmaceuticals, and particularly for medical equipment that goes into hospitals. So we look at the med tech sector as well. You know, companies like Medtech and Thermo Fisher, they look pretty interesting at these levels, as does the German Merck, which is the other Merck, different, same name, different company, and they produce a lot of the chemicals that are used in biotech industry. So we do like the theme structurally. I just think that along with a lot of other areas right now, there's a bit of an air pocket as the market digests this adjustment in interest rates and what the ultimate inflation outlook might be.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Kingsley Jones, Chief Investment Officer at Jevons Global, giving us his views, telling us that we're going to go through a bit of an air pocket. I think this air pocket is a very big one.
But the good news is I think the banks are relatively resilient. Big question mark, though, will be the Chinese financial sector because of the real estate challenges happening there.
And on that note, right, we have seen news coming out with regards to Shimao Group. They are a Chinese developer. Now, they have failed to pay the interest and principal payment of $1 billion offshore bond that was due yesterday on Sunday. This was the first missed public offshore payment for the Shanghai-based developer. They did not make principal payments under certain or other offshore indebtedness and have been in discussions with creditors to reach an amicable solution.
Shimao is the fourth biggest developer by contracted sales last year and the sixth largest issuer among Chinese developers with an outstanding $6.1 billion of international bonds. Just to get a bit of background, three of the top five issuers, Evergrande, Kaiser Group and Sunac China, have already defaulted on their dollar bonds.
So the company said that it sold close to more than 20 property projects to raise money and expects an acceleration of cash inflow from property sales. And the market shows signs of rebound. But we've had many conversations with economists and the property sector is actually one of the very weak spots in the Chinese economy. In terms of contribution to GDP, we're talking about 20% for the property sector and all the support services that go towards the sector. So it's a big contributor. And I think with all another big name possibly facing default, this is not going to help the sector at all, because then I think a lot of Chinese consumers will hold back their purchases, right? Because they'll be worried about, you know, is my developer going to go bust?
Yeah, I think this is the question about the binge in debt for many of these Chinese property developers in the early stages. And so now they're paying the price for that. The interesting thing about China is that fundamentally demand in the long term is going to be robust. So it's the question here is whether this blip is a temporary blip or not, whether eventually, you know, as they get their books right and whether the government can provide some short-term support, whether they can ride out this uncertainties in the immediate term. Because there's robust demand. China's GDP is expected to be relatively resilient in the midterm and long term.
Well, they're sticking to their 5.5% GDP growth, right, for this year. And the demographics are in that favour. But the challenge here for the government is how to ensure that they don't allow a property bubble to also be created if the monetary conditions are too accommodative. What's the balance there? But without also being seen as bailing out these property companies that have binged on cheap credit, I think it's going to be quite a challenge. But up next, we're going to be discussing the latest political developments in this country. Stay tuned for that, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.